Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all of our other episodes at cinematica.co.nz. Welcome everybody to Season 3. This is Episode 13 of Cinematica, and I'm Vance Levin. And with me here in the studio is...
Hello, it's Simon here.
And no Kaylee this week, she's unwell, so get well soon, Kaylee, all the way over there in Canada. It's a bit of a bummer to be poorly when you're on holiday, but hopefully you'll be able to get better listening to us, telling you to get better. Joining us in the studio, we have a special guest reviewer, so I'd like to welcome Steve Gray, former film reviewer for TV's Good Morning and popular culture commentator on the internets. G'day.
Hello. I thought it could be Kevin Smith, maybe.
You can be whoever you want. This is the
It's a podcast, doesn't he?
He does. Theatre of the Mind. You can be whoever you like. And you, what's the name of your blog, your website?
Oh, therealstevegray.com.
And that's Gray with a G-R-A-Y.
Yeah.
Yep, therealstevegray.com. So you can check out Steve's musings on all sorts
on
of
internet.
Subjects. There. In today's episode of the show, Steve and Simon are going to wrestle over the musical adaptation of Les Miserables. Tom Cruise is back in another multiplex franchise effort, Jack Reacher, that's called. Woody Allen continues his European tour into Rome with Love. And there's a vacation of a slightly different kind in Ben Wheatley's Sightseers. But first, let's have a look at what's in the mailbag. Normally we would say, Kaylee, what's in the mailbag? But she's not with us, so I'm going to have a little bit of a hunt around and see what sort of replies we've had from people. First of all, on the Twitter... Honey Hoxley on Twitter, Sarah Watt, who's been a guest on the show in the past, thanks to the rave reviews, I just listened to The Simon Show, which was one of our episodes before Christmas, which is the one where we talked about exhibition and what it's like to run a movie theatre, a chain of movie theatres, in fact. And she says, really interesting insight into the biz. So thanks very much for that. We've got a couple of two-word reviews for you from Robert Catto, who's now in Sydney. He's had a chance to see the perks of being a wallflower, which hasn't made it to our shores yet. He says he doesn't know how to do a two-word review of it, just one word, amaze.
I can do one.
Yeah?
Say no.
Say no.
Oh, first world problems. Those poor teenagers with their money.
Yes.
There's a really strange twist in it, though. It's interesting that you don't often see in American cinema.
All right. It's a bit do we have a date for the...
Do you know, that's undated. That
undated.
I'm not even sure if it's on its way.
Right, well, that's interesting. I know I talked to some people when I was overseas who'd just seen it in America and really, really liked it. So
lots of people love the book.
Right.
And sometimes,
so maybe they've got an allegiance to it, you think?
Yeah.
All right. And from Sakura59, also in Sydney, she's seen Gangster Squad and her two-word review for us of that hot mess. and Ryan Gosling is the hot part in that particular... That particular show. Now, also a bit of follow-up to last week's show. Simon, you were talking about your adventures with the Heimlich manoeuvre.
Oh, yes.
Simon saved a patron's life last
week. She was coughing away in the foyer and,
Did you for real save her?
Well, we had one person give it a try and it was getting worse and worse and then I gave it a crack the second time around.
Man.
Well, yes, that's right. You can looking at me, you can see that.
I'm looking at you.
We got some feedback from on Twitter from Leg Gully, who said apparently the Heimlich manoeuvre is not any longer the approved method by official first aid training.
What do they do now? Let them choke.
No, what you do is apparently you hit them in the back between the shoulder blades.
Right.
With your hand. Yeah, exactly. And because apparently the risk is that you can break ribs.
You can. Yeah, I was a bit worried
about
that.
Ribs?
Yeah, no, I did not. No, well, as far as I know.
she was just so happy. She was just so happy to still be alive.
That's a public service announcement. The back of the back.
Yes, exactly. You smack upwards between the shoulder blades.
Twitter rots.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, that's next time round, I'll know what to do.
All right, so thanks very much for your feedback. And there's a lesson to us all. It's time to upgrade and update your first aid certificates.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's have a look at what's been going on at the New Zealand box office, because it is an extremely busy time at the movies. Last week Life of Pi made a big leap into the top five after only 2 days because it was a New Year's Day opening. And here we look at the 4 days from 3rd of January to the 6th of January at number five, Quartet, which we reviewed in last week's show.
I saw it at the cinema. It was chockers.
Yeah, and exactly. And Dustin Hoffman and a whole lot of venerable old English actors and Scottish actors, for that matter, talking about... what it's like to grow old, really, and it's, it seems like a subject close to Dustin Hoffman's
heart. It's funny, all the old theatre jokes in there, though, because I said they've been around for years, a lot of those jokes that you say to people, like, oh, yes, I heard your Hamlet was great, my mother told me.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, and Ronald Harwood, who wrote the script, I'm sure, has been gathering those.
Bob Moore's.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Tom Courtney done that for years. He got really bad stage fright or something, or got over the whole sort of the obsession.
Oh, is that right?
The obsession with looks. He just got really insecure with aging and stuff. But I thought he looked fine. He didn't look like an opera singer, but I thought he was still looking fine. No,
and he looked in good shape, actually.
He didn't seem the strongest to me, though, like in that role. And I couldn't really see what charisma there might have been between them.
He seemed reticent to me, actually, to be honest. And it was I didn't think he suited it physically at
all. It did remind me, talking of Ronald Harwood, it did remind me of a film that I have a great affection for, which is The Dresser.
Stop that dress.
The Alhambra Theatre, Bradford. Albert Finney, exactly. So, you know, if anybody gets a chance, check out The Dresser. Fantastic. Okay, number four, Rise of the Guardians, which we haven't reviewed and are not scheduled to review yet. We might give it a bit of a mention
a little bit later on. In January.
I've seen it. I have knocked it off.
Oh, okay. Well, we can do a quick Rise of the Guardians. What do you reckon?
Two words? It's all right. I don't mind. You can either check it out and we'll do it next week.
Okay. Yep. It's my memory of it is kind of fuzzy, even though it was only 3 days ago since I saw it. Number three in the charts, a new entry, Tom Cruise in Jack Reacher. We'll be talking about that a little bit later on. And down from number two, you'd think this would have held the number one spot a little while longer, The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, or rather, as it is listed here, Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, The...
Is that number two?
It's at number two. It has been displaced by Life of Pi.
My mother saw that in Hamilton and the sound was off. They should have checked. Yeah, it was at the Lido. She's old as well. Because it just started. It was on the opening session and stuff.
It just hadn't quite been checked. It's a fantastic. It is absolutely doing amazing work for a film that I would have thought not that many people would be aware of, or not that many people would have known the book. I'm surprised, you know.
They really pushed the ads, particularly on Sky and stuff. I saw them constantly leading up over the Christmas break.
Yeah, and I think the whole 3D side of it has really driven it. Like, you know, people are really interested to check it out and see the standard.
Unlike most of it are just converted.
This one's genuine 3D.
Yeah.
And they haven't checked the theological aspect of the script either, which I think people may be a bit more weary of that.
Yeah, I think it's more sort of generically spiritual, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, but you've seen Hobbit and you've seen it in 48 frames?
No.
Oh, you haven't? Okay, but you've seen it in 3D?
No. I can't do 3D. I get glasses and it's annoying to me.
Okay.
They even talk about... How do you find it, Daniel?
3D.
With your glasses.
I find that some of the glasses that you get are uncomfortable for long periods because when you've got two pairs sitting on top of you. The Real D glasses are the lighter ones, the ones that are essentially disposable. I find I can cope with those for much, much longer. But I was very kindly given a pair of clip-ons in the Real D format, which I use quite a lot.
My ex-boyfriend's got a 3D TV, so I'm going to borrow because they've just got like sunnies, but they'll work and they're great and they're really lightweight and easy to watch TV with, so I might just borrow those next time I go to the movies and see one.
I'm using two systems at the moment. I'm using Real D and another Volfoni.
How do you find 48 frames?
I'm always interested in people's thoughts regarding the 3D and the 48 frames for Hobbit and then Pi and how they stand up against each other in terms of a 3D experience. And if I have to sit through another one, I'm gonna go with Pi because it just feels
I've heard that constantly,
and it's just so much more, you feel so much more in your comfort zone and everything feels so much more natural.
It's just as much CGI, it's just as much created in a computer as The Hobbit is. And yet, it's so much easier to watch. You know, there's an aesthetic about Life of Pi that really is. It's coherent and from beginning to end. And the use of the 3D. I think we mentioned this last week that because There are some moments in Life of Pi that 3D just genuinely accentuates, which it doesn't always do in
films. That's right.
You know, when he's falling into the water off the boat, and you just get a real sense of the depth of how far he's travelling, and the distance from the horizon, the distance from the shore, all that stuff is really important.
Mm. So, interesting. It was very interesting for me. There are a lot of films in 3D that you wouldn't, you know, you'd say, well, why? But this, to me, you can it makes a lot of sense, and it's in the hands of someone who really sort of knows the art form and what he's doing.
God, I think, or director, because he's just got such a sure touch. And I also think, as he is human, and it's something that's lacking in so much cinema.
Yep.
It is so cold. I think he does bring a much needed, you know.
If you think about films like Brokeback Mountain,
I love like Wedding Banquet. Stuff. And Eat, Drink, Man, Woman is just
the early Taiwan period.
But that's really like beautiful stuff.
Mm. I mean, he has been so consistent for so long, hasn't he, really? Yeah. I guess you could argue the Hulk was pretty much a diversion that shouldn't have occurred.
Yeah.
But they all
have their Hollywood excursions.
Yeah, but true. I think this is what I never actually got to see that version of the Hulk, and I keep meaning to, because I get the impression that having seen the films before and afterwards and watching his career, that there's probably some stuff going on under the surface of that Hollywood comic book stuff that is probably quite interesting, and that may in fact be why it didn't succeed.
He did one of the mistakes of doing a comic book film like it's a comic book, like actually with the and across town and doing the cross things.
Right.
I think maybe De Palma could make it work, but I don't think you need the actual text, because then it's like, because you're not watching a comic book, you're watching a comic book movie.
Mm.
So it is different.
Mm.
So I just think Avengers finally had sort of got that segue.
The balance, that right, balance yeah. between. Yeah. Right. Well, let's get into the meat of the show, ladies and gentlemen, because it's a tag team wrestling match now over a long awaited, if you've ever been to the movies in the last 9 months, these next few bars will be familiar to you.
A dream in time gone by, when hope was high, life worth living. I dreamed that love would never die. I dreamed that God would be forgiving. But the tigers come at night, with their voices soft as thunder.
And the tigers, ladies and gentlemen, they come at night. That is Anne Hathaway, and in a role that seems to be pretty much earmarked for the Best Supporting Actress Oscar.
Musical theatre producer Cameron McIntosh started the destruction of modern musical theatre with Cats, which then carried on with Phantom of the Opera, and surely reached the pinnacle of stupidity with La Miserable, a score which isn't just toneless with its recitative that feels like you're getting hit over the head with a hammer, but songs which we call one-verse songs, as in, you have an idea, I dreamed a dream. The song is that over and over and over. It's a one-verse song, but it goes for 4.5 verses. Or you have a dream like On My Own. I am on my own. That is the one idea which is repeated over and over.
I'm Jean Valjean.
Yes.
I am
Jean Valjean, and I'll be good now over and over. So, I mean, that's just where we've got to start from of looking at what London is.
Okay, so,
but it was one of the biggest musicals of all time and took so much money, and it's an assured hit.
And,
as is the film, I suspect.
And I don't deny I don't deny any of what you've just said, but as somebody who's not an expert in musical theatre or any of the technical aspects of it that you've just come up with, I saw it as a kid in London and adored it on stage and then saw it again.
Yep.
And
same for me.
And that's why children aren't critics.
Well, that's right.
Of musical theatre.
But it has this wonderful romance to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You saw it. I mean, I remember traveling overseas with my family going to see it. And it was a huge night, something you never forget.
Yeah.
Do you think it's like poverty porn, like all these poor people, but they're still fighting back? Because I've never seen the attraction of it, because 12 to 16-year-old girls adore it as well.
Yeah.
Because of that, you know, the On My Own girl. And it's like, she's a tragic part. It's like everyone's sort of got Cinderella complex. The women in the show are appalling.
Yeah.
Particularly when you think that they were coming off the French Revolution, where those women were amazing at that time. Well, this is just one generation
can't
later.
Can't you blame Victor Hugo for that?
But isn't there, you can't, because in the book, they're actually, I mean, I've read recently, there's some criticism that, you know, that in the book, the women figure heavily.
And they're strong. They're not as pathetic as this. And they could probably sing. Should we get to that yet?
Let's not. We'll hold that in reserve because just a little bit of background for those people who've been living under a rock for the last 25 years. Les Miserables, big Broadway musical, travelled around the world, on and on, stadium versions,
etc. Well used in American Psycho by Bret Easton Ellis to sort of juxtapose the whole moneyed nature of the world at that time. But everyone was flying to see Les Miserables about peasants dying in the street.
Exactly. Yeah. The film has been long awaited. It's directed by Tom Hooper, who won an Academy Award for The King's Speech, which was did massive business here in New Zealand. And he was given the task of turning this stage show into something cinematic. And he made this decision, which I think a lot of people have been talking about, which is to let the actors sing live on set so that they're really acting singing rather than actually Broadway singing.
And do you remember the last film that did this?
Was that the Beatles film?
No, it was At Long Last Love, the Peter Bogdanovich flop. With,
right, which nobody went to. Yes, I do remember that. But no, I think apparently they did it in Across the Universe, in some of the scenes of Across the Universe, the Beatles musical.
Julie Taymor, as we call it, won't be happy till she kills an actor.
That's right. So
Spider-Man.
I have to put my hand up here and say that I haven't yet seen Les Miserables, so I'm kind of trying to referee this bout that we have ahead of us.
I don't think it's about. I mean, I think a lot of what you're saying is correct, but I don't think that matters. I think that the audience out there is hungry to see it. They're really going to enjoy it. They're going to come out of it. And when I saw it, I felt that, you know, there were some risks, but that those risks actually, that they were negated, that they got away with it. There are some parts in the film when you think, okay, you know, because question mark over someone like Russell Crowe, you know.
I'd say most of the singing, actually. I thought Hugh Jackman's vibrato is shocking.
But
he's also a really light tenor, and it's a really high tenor part.
Sure, but he has a singing background, doesn't he?
I mean,
he
did Curly in Oklahoma, and he's, you know.
And I've seen the video of that, and he's really good.
He's okay. Yeah. It's an easy part. Well, yeah, it's not the thing for me is, it's almost like, this whole dialogue that's going now that Anne Hathaway is brilliant and needs to win the Oscar because she acts it. Why can't you sing and act? I mean, people have been doing that on stage. As Michael Cravaz tweeted after all this happened, he said, well, you know, on Broadway, we sing and act and dance as well quite often. Why is this that you... I don't know what they thought they'd add to it singing live, because I don't think with this... You need skilled singers to be able to do that. None of these people are that good. The bloody cassette is appalling. Amanda Siegfried... I mean, that reminded me of when Linda Ronstadt played Mimi in Love of Women. They called her Minnie Mouse on helium. She was that level of appalling.
Right.
So just sit by, but I'm a fan of musical theatre where you know, you're not microphoned, that you're trained, have some talent.
But does it work?
But interestingly, the standout singer in the film is also the young woman from, I think she's from the production, isn't she? And you're watching that and you go, yeah, okay. She stands out quite well. But then if you're selling the film,
you can't sell it on
people. You can't sell it on her. Well, you can't sell it on the stage
people who
members.
Don't like musicals, because people have said this for years, you've got to cast stars. And I mean, but surely people who don't like musicals aren't going to go anyway. It doesn't matter if you have a star in the role.
I think you widen the audience.
That's interesting.
With the actors that you've got there, all of a sudden you've got a much wider audience who will go and see it.
But I mean, do people go and see Wolverine because of Hugh Jackman or because it's Wolverine?
Well, that's the question, isn't it?
The two things.
That nobody really knows the answer to. Rochelle, who has occasionally been a guest on the show, who you met a little bit earlier on, she went to see Les Miserables, and when I talked to her afterwards, and she was like, but it was all singing. Like, she was surprised, you know? Yeah. It's like, this is all singing. And actually, if you look at the second trailer, the longer version of the trailer that isn't all Anne Hathaway, there's dialogue in there. So it's going to lead people to believe that it's
why do they bother? Just be honest about it.
I mean, she really found it like watching paint dry. She, you know, it was it was repetitive and drag.
And if you're not familiar with the songs, if you're not actually, because I think the music's incredibly catchy. Like, if you the lyrics, you can put the lyrics to one side. I find it's the melodies that actually have stuck with me for a long time.
No, don't review the stage show. Be quiet, Daniel. It's ridiculous and doesn't add to it. We've talked about the score. You haven't seen the film. Yeah. Everyone's really complaining about him having the camera up their noses for every solo.
And I
found it incredibly weird. Like,
it's an interesting choice, isn't it? What do you think, Si?
Yeah, look, I enjoyed it to a point, but I felt like I didn't come out of it wanting to charged down the corridor with my arm in the air, sort of singing. But then I saw people who did,
yeah,
you know, and I saw people with crying, you know, with tears in their eyes and everything like that. So it was more like curiosity for me as to how they would pull this together. Would it work? You know, would
it work for you though as a piece of cinema?
It did.
Honestly, don't lie. No. $2
I think they got away with it. Look, I think they get away with it, but I don't think it's. I think it's probably overblown. I don't think it's as good as what they think it is. And I think in, you know, years to come, you'll look back and go, well, it wasn't, you know, it was okay.
Yeah, I think
Is it going to have a life? That's the question.
Yeah. The thing that annoyed me most about Anne Hathaway is the way she plays that whole scene, and the whole character is like she is a movie star who's suddenly been thrown into this horrible world.
Yeah,
like, if she'd actually been born into that world, she would have known that it's horrible and pretty much a horrific way of life. So her whole kind of, I can't believe I'm living this life, is a bit like, well, honey, wake up, you were born here. You're not a movie star playing this part.
Yeah.
You're meant to actually just be playing that part.
But I actually found her part and, you know, her time on the screen is one of the more rewarding ones.
See, I found it so weak.
Yeah, I didn't.
She's lived and survived that long, but now she's like, oh, just so weak.
Yeah.
If you see like Patti LuPone or Ruthie Hennell, who both played along Broadway, singing the role, you're like, yeah, you can.
So who's let's shut up about the stage show, shall we?
But I reckon I'm a lot like, I think I'm a lot like a lot of people out there who've seen it X number of years ago.
And don't have the same memories.
And they just have this romantic attachment to it. And then they go to the film, and then, that's right, bang. You know, and it takes you through it,
civilians
and it reminds you of
word,
it.
Simon. Yeah. Civilians, they'll like it. And they will.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think it's going to keep going, the box office wise. I mean, definitely we're seeing how tricky it's all been this week with everything sort of swapping around in America as well.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to have legs. But yeah, I do dislike the musical, so it is hard for me. But I just don't think singing live, it brings anything to the text.
Right.
Yeah,
okay. And nothing to the drama.
I was pleasantly surprised with Russell Crowe. I actually thought, you know, because this big bombastic kind of figure that he's meant to be in the character, which I guess he's like generally probably, but you know, he pulled it off for me. I thought
his
singing
Stomper?
Yeah,
you see, that's where he played for me just repressed rage,
and
I was hoping for something like that,
yeah,
but it was just more sort of like pursed lips.
Well, you're not gonna get Rumpus Stomper in Les Mis.
Gilfred, just give him a kiss, you're so obsessed, get over it. Come on. Rusty, he was a bit pursed lips Queenie, come on.
I must admit, when I was sitting there watching it, I thought, hey, you know, why don't you just take this and give it a modern spin and set it in, you know, just outside the New York Stock Exchange or something, and have a barricade there, and give it a kind of a now feel.
Occupy Miserab.
Yeah, that's right. You know, that to me would have been a bit more interesting.
Well, it's always kind of been a metaphor for what's going on in the world. Nothing's changed money-wise. You know,
the rich
are getting richer and the poor are getting, it's even worse now. So in some ways it should resonate more. And it's a real shame they didn't do anything to make it.
Exploitation, etc.
But Cameron McIntosh, hello, who I mentioned, one of the most horrific musical theatre producer since Daniel Merrick, would never do that because he knows what it is, and it's his product, and that product works as that, and there's no way he would ever mess with it.
Sure.
Yeah.
And, I'm expecting Miss Saigon next.
Well, and this is the thing, is that actually over the 25 years of Les Miserables, or even longer, it hasn't undergone much of a revolution.
They cut 20 minutes, the recent revival on Broadway. He's bringing it back to Broadway as well, but they did redo it recently and cut 20 minutes.
But it's not like Sondheim, who the people are going and doing sort of chamber versions, or you know, acoustic versions.
Did you see that recent version of
Company,
Park of George?
That
was stunning. I know you're in love with that Company.
Yeah,
the end still doesn't work. It doesn't.
But it didn't matter. I was
it's
floating by
score,
that point.
Eh?
Yeah,
it's one of the reasons why I never support marriage for anyone. I grew up on that score, and I was like, oh no, marriage is bad. Yeah, I think if your mum's been bad, and like, because I've been holidaying my mother, I was ready to take her because she was being naughty. Yeah.
To Les Mis.
Yep, this is your punishment. You hear this bad singing lady?
Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap up with the traditional fashion. Luckily, I don't have to do this because I haven't seen it yet. But see if we can reduce it to two words. Yeah,
revolutionary revival. Here you go. Mm. Yeah,
your choice.
Yeah. Your choice.
Yeah. Mm.
Yep. Excellent. That's.
I told you so.
Clearly, how I
exactly.
You
and there you are on the fence at the end. All right. Time to go to Rome.
I lived in Rome for a year when I was your age.
Ah.
This might have been my exact street.
Come on in. My girlfriend makes great espresso.
My friend just broke up with her boyfriend. I told her she could stay with us. She's smart and funny. Men just adore her. I think it's because of the sexual vibe that she gives off.
I always had a little yen for sleeping with a woman, and when I finally did it, it was incredible.
She's something, isn't she?
Isn't it nice to be someplace of pleasure?
No.
That's the new Woody Allen, To Roam With Love, his follow-up to the Academy Award nominee. Did it win Best Original Screenplay, or was it just nominated last year for Midnight in Paris?
Oh, I can't recall.
It seems like such a long time ago.
I'd still be obsessed with the Oscars, but it's not really as important as it used to be.
No, it's not. It's sort of just a hook to be able to get into.
I always feel like it's you know... The quality's just simmering below, and it's not really recognised. You know, the films like, I don't know, Unprofit and things, even did that one, I can't remember, but you know, some of the more stronger art films,
don't get nominated.
They just don't get as much, you know, coverage as they should.
I remember the year Secrets and Lies was, and I was so excited, because I was like, this is, you know, the Mike Leigh film, and I was like, this getting nominated for an Oscar, that's hopefully exciting, and it didn't really open the gates.
In some ways, just getting the nomination is enough recognition, because actually it's a complete lottery what happens after that.
I mean, you think about something like Django, which is, you know, ultra-violent, like pretty violent, but...
Entertaining,
yeah. And actually, when you dig through it a bit and cut through the layers, you know, quite a commentary on race... on race in the US and so on. Yeah. And you put, you know, it's interesting, you got that and Lincoln side by side, and you put them together, and they're actually, you know, in some ways they're kind of similar films. You know, they're sort of about how you achieve liberation for the Negroes and how Tarantino goes about it and how Spielberg goes about it, you know, two different worlds.
Very different worlds. Anyway, let's talk about Woody Allen now, because he was the subject.
How did we get there?
That's my show.
Hold on.
No, it's not actually.
Hey, the theme this week is La Revolution.
That's right.
Woody Allen,
cup's no barricade, my friend.
No, we'll just knock this off as quickly as possible then.
Who plays the 20-year-old girl he's got the crush on? Go.
Well, actually,
there's always one.
No, in this case, there is a young woman who a crush is had on, but that crush is
perpetrated.
It's Ellen Page. The crush is perpetrated by Jesse Eisenberg from The Social Network, who's perhaps a little bit of a substitute for Woody Allen, and much all the men really are Woody Allen, aren't they, in this film.
Even Alec Baldwin.
I reckon there's something about his sort of wistfulness about lost past times and nostalgia and what have you that's sort of very much modern Woody Allen.
Is this Hannah and her sister's Woody Allen, or is this...
This is very light and frothy Woody Allen.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, and not the worst for that, actually. You know, I think that those days of him really sort of doing sort of Ingmar Bergman-style interior desolation are long gone, and he's... To Roam With Love is a collection of four or five different stories that they don't meet, but they do sort of interlace as the film goes on. And I felt that Midnight in Paris last year was kind of slender. Like, it was that idea wasn't strong enough to sustain a whole film. It was like a sketch, really. And here in To Roam With Love, we've got five sketches which are perfectly balanced for each other. None of them are particularly massive or strong or what have you, but they just sort of come and go just at the right time.
See, I wouldn't agree. I thought Midnight in Paris was really entertaining and worked really well the whole way through, whereas To Roam With Love, there's maybe, you know, there's these five stories, and they don't really connect, and they don't really... There's one or two that are more interesting than the others, and there's some that work and some that don't.
And none of them actually really necessarily belong in Rome either. They could be anywhere.
Isn't this because he's getting sponsored by the tourist board?
Exactly.
Tax break to go to Rome.
He likes to work. There's
the daughter getting married to the, you know, which I must admit, it's quite, you know, nice to see films where trade unionists are kind of mentioned, because it doesn't happen very often anymore. So that's kind of cool. You know, yeah, that's right. You get that in Europe, I guess, so that's nice. So she's marrying this sort of trade unionist, isn't she? And he, you know, and then his father is this guy who can only sing has this amazing singing voice.
But he can only sing in the shower.
Only in the shower, okay. And so Woody Allen is this kind of...
He's a retired opera producer, funnily enough, so he turns up and he decides that he's going to turn this guy into a star.
Yeah,
who plays the singer?
An Italian singer, nobody that I'd heard of, but obviously somebody who can do
not
it.
Not Hugh Jackman.
No,
yeah. So
not in it.
So, And of course it falls flat the first time he's not in the shower. It's a disaster. And everyone goes, yeah, you failed again, you know, but to old Woody. I mean, I thought his wife's character,
Judy Davis.
She got some good lines in it. Yeah, she got some nice lines in it.
I'm finding they need to use good actors well more. Like when you get an actor like that and give them a good part, it is such a pleasure.
Oh, it is. I thought Woody Allen was fine in this film. Because often I think he hasn't, you know, he's better to step back. But in this one, I thought he was absolutely fine. But then, you know, like you've got the Jesse Eisenberg with the girlfriend who's looking to sleep with her friend and so on, and Alec Baldwin providing this commentary on it. And then you've got the young couple arriving in Rome who
get separated and they both sort of have flings, don't they?
Yeah, Penelope Cruz comes into it, doesn't she? And she plays a prostitute who kind of makes jokes about...
Because no one can ever say no to Penelope Cruz.
And I have to say that the
kind of 1950s attitudes to women... throughout the film, like basically all, and maybe he, you know, you could he, Woody Allen might argue that he's making a comment on the whole Virgin Madonna whore dichotomy, but actually it seemed like it's actually coming pretty much straight from his own.
But you know, we missed one other main
one story,
didn't we? Which is the guy who wakes up one morning and is just famous, just walks out of the room and is
walks out of his house and he's got surrounded by
paparazzi
for no apparent reason,
and they watch him like. Make us, you know, what did you have for breakfast? Toast, you know, like it's
And what's that about?
This sort of, I think it's about the whole
certainly in thing.
Well, just no. I think it's about the whole
celebrity culture
and reality TV and all that sort of stuff, and kind of like, you know, watching paint dry.
Can he really comment on that?
Not necessarily.
You're so close to it. I mean, I'm asking, is it possible for him to comment on it?
I actually think at times that's quite entertaining, you know, and it's
a beautifully performed piece. It's Roberto Benigni plays the character, and he's just got some lovely comic moments in it. But it is.
Having been trained with the real classic. Physical actors, I always found Roberto a little.
But you know, he moving on. But you know, like, and that's an interesting sort of piece of the film.
Sounds quite different from everything else.
It is quite different in places. Yeah,
I get the feeling that there's a whole, because if you saw the documentary about Woody Allen that was playing at the Cinema Showcase last year, he talks about. Waking up every morning and sitting at the same typewriter that he's been writing at since he was a boy, and he just writes. When he's not on set, he sits and writes, and he writes sketches or scenes or jokes or short stories or what have you, and then he puts them all away and spreads them out across his bed sometimes and goes, oh, that's an idea, and I might expand that a bit further. And I get the feeling that these were all little trifles, you know?
Do you think he satiated his demons decades ago, and ever since then he's just been doing it for some reason?
I think it's very likely. I think he just likes to work, to be honest. Yeah. I think, and there's nothing wrong with that, you know, that he's, nearly 80 or over 80 now.
And he's still better than what Altman came at the end, who was just making the most appalling messes of movies.
Yeah, and these are all still... distinctly Woody Allen films.
Though, this is what I always say about cinema. Is it worth the $17 or whatever? Is it worth that at the movies to see this?
I would say no. You could probably afford to wait.
I think if you'd seen a few other films beforehand and you still wanted to go out, you'd come out of it going, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't, you know... If you prioritised all the films that are around at the moment, it wouldn't be at the top of your list.
Yeah, exactly. And while I was in the States last year, I saw Manhattan... while I was in New York, and watching Manhattan in New York after you've just been walking around, and you realise what a fantastic, a masterpiece of a film it is, and then you see, you're right, that this is a filmmaker who just likes to go to work, right? So he writes, and then when he's ready to shoot something, he shoots, and he gets lots of great people working with him, but he doesn't work hugely long hours. You know, he's a bit like Clint Eastwood in this respect, in that, you know, they like to be knocking off at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
But I love Woody though. I mean, I think he's made some of the best films ever.
There's nothing to dislike about this film, and there's a lot to enjoy.
Yeah, but it just doesn't. It's a bit like a takeaway. It just doesn't fill your tummy up.
It's a trifle. Like what did it's a trifle.
Yeah. Yes.
My two-word review: Roman trifle.
Two words. Geez.
See, I got to use that. Thank you for giving me that.
Oh, your two words.
Yeah, two words.
Two words. Well, I just look. It's just a nice. What do you say? It's. I don't know, some sort of nice light film. It's a light day in Rome.
Yeah. All right. Okay. I'm going to pretend that was two words.
Thank
and give you
that's
the benefit
good.
Of the doubt.
Yeah.
Time for some news. Talking of Woody Allen, his late period appears to go from strength to strength in terms of the business. I mean, because Midnight in Paris actually grossed more than any other Woody Allen film in history. So obviously, people are still funding his stuff. Blue, his new
story.
His next film has just made some cast announcements. It's called Blue Jasmine, and it'll be shot back home in New York, and will feature Alec Baldwin once again, Kate Blanchett, Louis C.K. and Sally Hawkins is going to be in the next Woody Allen film.
The director of Final Destination 2 died.
We're coming to that.
Oh, shoot.
Coming to that. Thank you. Thank you for that.
How did he die, though? That's what I want to know.
Well,
was he in the Zorb?
You're cruel, you two. All right. So let's get all these jokes out of the way then. Fans of pulpy cinema fun will be sad to learn of the death of David R. Ellis, the director of films like Snakes on a Plane, Shark Night 3D, and Final Destination 2.
Final Destination 2 is really good.
It is good, isn't it? He started as a stuntman and transitioned to feature film directing through the second unit work on films like Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone and The Matrix. He was in South Africa doing pre-production for a film called Kite, and the star of that film, Samuel L. Jackson, tweeted his condolences when he heard, which is nice.
Gut-checking.
So you want to get your joke, your Final Destination joke?
No, I love Final Destination.
No, indeed, it is. It's always.
But it is a franchise that's sort of, you know, really three, four. How many have they done? Like
six.
You know,
the final six. One is actually I've really liked it because I got over that. I hated the whole Saw postal
exactly.
Can't do it.
Yeah, no, that's hideous.
Can't.
Yeah.
And interestingly,
it's fun.
And the 3D in those the later Final Destination films is always really inventive as well.
And it also goes back to the old Slash and Stalk of the 70s where you actually want them to live. You're not having the audience scream, die, die, die.
You annoying people.
Yeah. It's actually kind of positive if there was such a way when you die.
All right, final piece of news. Oscar buzz, we talked about a little bit earlier on, is building. In fact, by the time you listen to this podcast, the nominations will probably be announced. Host
Isn't
Seth
like 1 a.m. tomorrow?
Yeah, something like that. Seth MacFarlane and Emma Stone will make the announcement at the Samuel Goldwyn Theatre in Beverly Hills on Thursday night, New Zealand time, I think. So maybe it's the day after.
No.
In the meantime, the Directors Guild have announced their nominations, and they are Argo, Zero Dark Thirty, Les Miserables, Life of Pi, and Lincoln. So nothing for Tarantino for the Directors Guild this time around.
Yeah, see, and that's wrong.
Political.
Ahead of
Les Miserables. Remember that? Yeah. They're so political, these guilds and everything. That's crazy.
Yeah, I very nearly added an extra piece of news, which is the Sound Mixers Association nominations. But I thought that would be scraping the bottom of the barrel.
I'd say they didn't do it because of the whole Emmy controversy, because they're so childish.
All right. Time to start talking about Mr. Tom Cruise.
Jack Reacher is a ghost, served in the military police. A brilliant investigator. Troublemaker, too. Then, 2 years ago, he disappears. You don't find this guy unless he wants to be found.
Excuse me, sir. There's a Jack Reacher here to see you.
All right, Tom Cruise, Jack Reacher. This is a film that's based on a best-selling series of thriller novels. A little bit like that Tyler Perry thing, Alex Cross, earlier on or last year, which was also intended to sort of spawn a franchise.
These franchises are huge, aren't they?
They are. So many people online complaining about Tom Cruise's height.
Oh, well, he's 6'5 and built like a... you know, brick.
Yeah.
You know, that thing. Yeah, and I mean, he's meant to be huge. And I'm actually a member of one of those pages.
See, I haven't read the books, but my wife Rebecca has, and she we went and saw it on Friday night, and you know, ticked all the boxes for her. She thought it was great.
Okay. That's cool. As a fan of the character.
Yeah,
so
yeah, as a character.
True to the spirit
because,
of the character.
Because he brings the intensity and the sort of, I don't know, like the way that he speaks and the way he's in the books,
he does staccato.
Yeah, and he brings that, which she thought was right. Yeah,
I think actually now with everything that's happened with Cruise, God help us recently, I think he's actually right for the part because he seems like such a weird little man and he's sort of, I think he has no machismo. I think he's wrong for the part in that I don't really buy him as a man, let alone a big, strong ex-soldier thing. I do see some actors of like just be like pampered, and I never see him as like, everything he does, I'm just kind of like...
The funny thing is, if you were to look at that role, who would you put in it?
Ray Stevenson, who was in Rome, He played the blonde guy's best friend, who was one of the gladiators, and he's like 6'5" and built like the proverbial brick.
Because
he's a really nice actor.
When you talk about people like that, you know, my greatest fear was that somebody like Gerard Butler would get the role as one of those sort of.
Yeah, I mean that's what the director said in someone else. They said, "Well, you've got to have a star," and I was, it seems weird if you've got such a greatly successful book franchise, you wouldn't really have to need a star.
But they said
you can never find an actor that big. Because everyone in that Hollywood's so small.
Yeah, I mean, you look at all the stars, they're all,
they're Oompa Loompas. It's true. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Well, that was the mistake that they made with Alex Cross, was that they went to Tyler Perry to do it, who is a big star in some sectors of the industry, but not in the mainstream. Doesn't cross over. And unfortunately, the book, the transition from the book to the film didn't sustain the fact that they had no charisma in terms of their lead. So I think that you can't just rely on the book. You can't just rely on the fans of the book. Yeah, if you're gonna, you know, that's
true. That they breed. It doesn't mean they'll go to the cinema.
No. So this is this is not the first book in the series, though, is it? They've just plucked one that's a light.
But it is
transition.
Based around, is it first shot?
Yeah, First Shot was it called.
The book, and it is based around that. It says that in the credits, it's based around that. But I think it's not absolute to it.
Well, the series science sounds quite weird. Like, he just sort of, like, blows into town a lot, and he's sort of in all the old spaghetti westerns and cleans it up and then blows out again.
Yeah, right. And woman kind of swoon.
Yes.
And the woman who swoons in this film is Rosamund Pike, former Bond girl.
Yeah.
And
she doesn't hit the camera, which is always good from the younger actors.
Yes, yeah.
I think it's annoying when they hit the camera with their heads.
For me, the best and most striking thing about Jack Reacher, and the thing that I'll remember, is the fact that somebody's made really, really good use of Werner Herzog as the villain. I think he's just fantastic. Mm. And you think, oh, it's kind of a shame because he'll never be a Bond villain now, which he's done this. And yet he's just creepy as all get out. And but it's also that it's Werner Herzog's voice, the voice that you've heard talking about albino alligators for years. And, you know, it's quite a relaxing voice when you hear them narrating his documentaries, but he is insane. Yeah. And you get that. It's like,
you see him and you can see it. Like, you're like, okay. He is crazy, this guy.
Brave casting and really successful casting.
Yeah. Side note, I reread Klaus Kinski's autobiography over the holidays. Speaking of insane.
It's good Christmas reading.
It's so intense. The sister scenes, you're like, oh my God, stop it. Yeah. I think it's a great idea, though. I think it's that whole thing I was saying before, you know, casting actors and stuff that'll just be brilliant. Mm. And particularly when you don't have someone that riveting. And I mean, did your wife find him satisfactory as Jack Reacher?
Yeah, she did. And like what I, you know, what I said before, I think that because he carries off all the intent and the way that the character, you know, delivers, you know, speaks in the book and all the rest of it, like he brings that to the film and it works, and he does it well. He has that intensity. And you know, because I mean, you know, throughout the film, there's all these sort of things where he just sort of sums it up black and white, cuts to the chase, and bam, you know, and you're, oh, of course, that makes so much sense, you know.
There seemed like an awful lot of exposition. There was an awful lot of explaining stuff to each other.
I sat there riveted. I didn't find, you know, quite often with that, you go, oh, okay, all right, you know, I get it, come on, you don't have to keep spelling it out. But with this, I still found it was a kind of a minimal type film. Like, it wasn't, you know, you weren't bombarded with stuff.
It's adapted and directed by Christopher McQuarrie, and I'm just having a look at seeing what else he's done. He wrote Valkyrie for Tom Cruise.
Oh,
The Way of the Gun. What else has he directed?
He wrote Usual Suspects.
He wrote The Usual Suspects, and also The Way of the Gun. He directed which was really nice.
Birthing scene.
But I notice here I'm looking at IMDb, and here he is. He's down to write and direct Mission Impossible 5, so he's obviously
sleeping with Tom Cruise. Sort of screamingly obvious, isn't it?
But I did think that there are a number of things about the film and his writing and direction which I thought were really appealing. One is that I thought that the violence was there were some really inventive action sequences in terms of the fights. Like, it wasn't the same stuff you see over and over again. There's a particularly funny one where two thugs attack Tom Cruise in a bathroom.
That's a very good scene.
It's just nice to see things done a little bit differently.
Yeah, I could actually see that happening. That kind of, it kind of went on a little bit too long.
Which is a bit of the same. time of the, yeah, the film.
Everything's
as a
been
whole.
Getting so sort of cartoony and over the top. It is nice to be back to a good old. It's not old boy level of violence. And
no,
mayhem,
no,
but it's
but
still
it's not
better
it's
than
not
the
cartoonish.
But yeah. then violence is kind of silly and comical, isn't it? And silly stuff happens that yeah. doesn't make any sense. And I thought that came up. You know, there's scenes in there where it's all very matter of fact, and he's because I know in the books he kind of like does a Sherlock Holmes. You know, I'm gonna hit him on the right side of the neck and
does he
drop
think
him down
or
the,
say it?
And in the book, well, I can't remember. Like in the book, it's very much so. Like, you know, he breaks it all down
right, and then does it.
Yeah. Whereas in the film, you know, you don't really get that so much. It's just very clinical. And
actually,
to the
talking
point,
of Sherlock Holmes, I had that thought when I was watching the film. Actually, that this was really just a version of Sherlock Holmes with Rosamund Pike as Watson, trailing around, having to have everything explained.
Yep.
You know, and but you know that stuff works, doesn't it? So
it does.
You know,
people like it simple.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So Jack Reacher seems to be doing. Reasonable business, and I would imagine we'll be seeing.
I think it'll die. I think with the whole going into Academy Award time,
it's going to find it hard. Yeah, look, yeah. But it's good.
Will they come back for another one? Do you think?
And also counter programming. You need something else that's not all sort of that's, Oscar bait as
yeah,
well.
That's right.
People just go, well, let's just go
that's
to that.
True.
And compromise films, aren't they called?
Yeah. my fear for it was that it was going to be one of those like one of those parody action movies that they had in 80s films. Like, do you remember watching what was that Altman film about Hollywood?
The Player.
The Player, right? Where Bruce Willis turns up at the end. No, I know. It was a, but Bruce Willis turns up in the parody action movie at the end, and I was thinking, like, everything about Jack Reacher, the trailer, the fact that Tom Cruise was in it, and I was thinking, oh, Tom Cruise, he's kind of game, isn't he, to be in one of these parody movies, parodying himself? And it's not a parody at all. It's actually very
takes itself
quite seriously.
I just don't.
Yeah.
It succeeds.
It's just not aiming that high.
No, that's right.
Well, not that it's not aiming high. It's what it is. It is what it is.
Yeah, I just think that probably the books are pretty rock standard as well. You know, they're not going to take it,
but I have to say that that compared to Alex Cross, which was possibly the worst film that I saw
that was
last
a disaster.
Year, it was a disastrous film.
But you didn't like Pitch Perfect, so I'm not taking you seriously on anything.
Oh yeah, well, that's true.
That shows you're homophobic too, not like.
Oh, does it? Oh, does it?
You didn't like Cross yet either.
No, as I said, in the car coming out here, some of my best friends are gay. Can't be homophobic. So two words for Jack Reacher. Well, three of us have seen it.
I got.
Let you go first this time.
Keep reaching.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you meant to be like witty.
I was trying to be. Was it not witty?
Reach around.
Reach around.
Ooh,
oh,
ouch.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
You try to bleep that out.
Beep, beep.
You can cut that and edit this. Beep, beep.
No, I'll just assume that. I won't bleep it out. I'm just going to assume that our audience is innocent enough to not know what you were talking about.
Isn't this
about
on the internet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
it's on
fine.
iTunes, but you know what Apple are like. They're very picky about that sort of stuff. Yeah.
I get into trouble. I won't tell you what for something I posted.
Okay.
My two words for Jack Reacher are cruise mode, because it's really just, you know, I don't need to explain myself.
Yeah,
explaining myself. It's obvious. All right. Time to go on holiday.
Show me your world, Chris.
Well, I thought we'd start with Crouch Tram Museum.
Great.
Dear Mum, Yorkshire is lovely, not like you said at all. They can smile, and they do sell my pasta sauce.
If you don't pick up this excrement immediately, then I'm going to have to inform the National Trust.
Report that to the National Trust, mate.
I don't want this to ruin our holiday.
Get in.
Never thought about murdering innocent people before.
It's not a person, Tina, he's a Daily Mail reader.
that is Sightseers. You were talking about counter programming up against all of the Oscar stuff that's going on at the moment. This is a relatively low budget indie English movie directed by a guy called Ben Wheatley. This is his second feature. It was called Kill List, which was both these films have been quite big in Ant's Incredibly Strange section of the film festival. I saw
Kill List is the one that everyone said don't do any spoilers, just watch.
No, just watch it. Yeah. Exactly. And I watched that in preparation for Sightseers, and it's obviously really low budget, but it's it does have lots of fantastic twists, and it just goes in directions that you really don't expect.
Can I just say, as soon as that ads started playing, both of you two started giggling. Like,
yeah,
girl,
it's great.
You loved it.
It's just so neat.
Have you seen Sightseers?
Yeah. I thought it was just spectacular.
What? Why?
Well, it's...
Because, I mean, just listen to the way she was talking.
It's got lots of twists. So basically what we've got is we've got a lonely mid-30s English woman who's been living with her
trapped
mother.
Trapped in this house with her mother. Awful mother.
She's a bit of a dog whisperer. She likes to think she's a bit of a dog whisperer. She's got a dog psychology degree. And
she's doing penance for the dog.
Yeah. She's found this boyfriend at Capoeira. He's a red-bearded sort of... her mum basically doesn't trust him. But then her mum wouldn't trust anybody. So you don't really know what's going to transpire. But it turns out he's a psychopath.
Well, no, but go back a sec.
Spoilers as well?
No, you get that pretty early on.
Because the way that it spun out, you know, you've got this woman who's trapped in this horrible environment, and he comes along and you go, oh, he's just this gentle giant, you know, he'll be lovely, and oh, you know, he looks a bit strange and he's got his hobbies and everything, but
very English,
but he's going to take her away and they're going to go off on this adventure together, and it's all going to be about prizing this young woman away from this evil mother, you know, and that's the first place that it takes you, and of course it doesn't go there.
It just keeps taking left turns. It's really good. Thinking of describing it while I was watching it, it was as if Mike Lee had directed Badlands.
Oh.
You know? Because it's like one of those early Mike Lee films, like Nuts in May, you know, where they all go camping or what have you, and it's kind of semi-improvised, and these are characters that you laugh at, and then they go off on this rampage.
And she gets a taste for it even more so than him.
It's like Butterfly Kiss and all the... didn't really feed each other, but that kind of feeds the other with the meat.
Exactly, and they sort of, and she just discovers that she has this taste for it, and she doesn't want to go back in the box.
She's going to do anything she can to keep her man and to keep going.
It's brilliantly done. It's got lots and lots of wonderful lines in it. Some cringe-making scenes of the kind that Mike Lee would really approve of. And then it's also got this whole sort of serial killer thing going on, which is terrific. I think it's one of my highlights of the year already. It's going to be it's going to be very hard to knock this one out of the top 10.
Great things about it, though.
Yeah, you know, having grown up in England and actually visited some of those places, and it is always raining. There's no question.
Is it too dark, though? Because sometimes with women, you can take them to films like this, and then they're like, well, I don't know why you took me to this because it's not funny. Is it funny? Does it work? Or is it too
dark? It is funny. I think it's funny. I'm sure there are people out there who it won't be for them, you know, but I think it's hilarious.
But not nasty with it.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit.
but you know what I mean. Yeah. Unnecessarily.
No, it's
nothing's unnecessary in it. It all kind of stacks up.
And everybody
always is.
What's that?
Is murder is sometimes.
Yeah, that's right.
Everybody that they kill, this is the thing, and the kill list is the same, actually, of his earlier film, is that everybody that they kill, they're awful. They're awful people, and you can sort of, but then the killers are awful too, and basically what it's saying is that everybody in England is awful.
Awful.
That's his message.
Especially the ones at camp.
Yeah, exactly. Caravanning. Oh my god!
That guy that's got his bike thing where he lives in it and he drives.
He's got exactly. There's a character in it who turns up at the campsite and he's built a fiberglass shell for his sit down bicycle and he sleeps in it. It's like a little, and he's trying to sell the idea, and it's just awful people everywhere, and you just you totally understand why somebody would want to.
I didn't find her awful though.
No, she's kind of innocent, and yet she's more awful in what she actually does. She's more awful than the rest of them. Yeah. So it's lovely, some lovely sort of twists, and the performances are just fantastic from people that you haven't seen before.
So a thrilling surprise would
That's
be my two words.
Word review. Good, and you not having
and
seen
I haven't
it.
Even seen it.
Yeah,
that really
you've
rocked.
Just stolen our thunder.
I would say that would be rainy vacation for me.
Caravan Mayhem.
Fantastic. That is our show for this week. Thank you very much, everybody.
I dreamed a dream of musicals where people could sing.
Are you singing the outro? Thank you. If you've enjoyed this episode, I was just going to say, what are we going to do next week? I suppose we should have a think about what have we got coming up?
The Master.
Maybe The Master. Oh, well, you've seen it. Si, we can talk about.
What else we got?
You poor thing. Do you want to cuddle after seeing The Master?
I like it. Well, I don't want to say too much now, but
don't give it away. Don't speak, as Woody Allen would say. Silence.
What do we got? We got The Master. You've got, you've got a lot of animation, actually.
Oh, what?
Oh, right, we can do Rise of the Guardians.
Paranorman, you've got next week opening.
Paranorman, the first gay character in an animated feature.
Yes, right.
Boy, it's funny. Annalaine Stritch voicing as well, so it's always a winner for me.
Yeah, there's lots to like in Paranorman.
It's great,
Gangster Squad opens next week.
Oh, Gangster Squad. Indeed, more Ryan Gosling. Finally, Ryan Gosling drought is over.
That was the one they pulled because it had a gun scene and someone got killed in America.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. In a picture theater. Yeah, that's right.
It's every time any violence happens, they're going to pull the movies now.
So if you've enjoyed this episode of the show, don't forget to click subscribe in iTunes because that's how these things arrive magically every Thursday morning. So the latest episode, you know, we don't want you to miss out, basically. Please feel free to leave us feedback at the iTunes store ratings. Ratings and reviews, always helpful in terms of helping people discover the show. You can contact us via Twitter at CinematicaCast or Facebook, facebook.com CinematicaPodcast, or at our website. Thank you. Cinematica.co.nz. If you're still listening, the show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music is 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke, which you can buy at the iTunes store. We're going to leave you with some more music. Woody Allen's films are always notable for their soundtracks. This time he has found some cheesy Europop. This is the Starlight Orchestra and a film a tune called
I think you did.
Yeah. Well, just hold on a second.
He just turned you down. Now he's turned you up again.
Not the first time.
Yeah. I'm just about to get to that. This is the Starlight Orchestra and Amore Mio, and check out the spoons on this. Thanks to our special guest Stephen Gray. Nice to have you here. Yeah. I think.
Check out the spoons. Thanks, Stephen Gray. It's a segue to after.
Until next week. That's all from me, Dan Slevin.
And it's good night from me. Or good day.
Amore mio, amada mia, amore mio.